Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Two U.S. officials tell CBS News that Israel appears to have begun a rolling start to its long-anticipated ground invasion of Gaza. CBS's Charlie Daggett is in the southern city of Sderot, Israel.
The skyline over Gaza City lit up in the most ferocious and sustained bombardment the territory has seen since the Israeli military unleashed its aerial assault on Hamas militants nearly 3 weeks ago. Whether the series of powerful explosions was the precursor to the major ground invasion, the Israeli Defense Forces would only say ground operations were expanding tonight, warning residents of Gaza City to seek safer conditions, that the IDF would persist in its attacks on the city and surrounding areas.
The UN General Assembly has adopted a resolution calling for a humanitarian truce in Gaza. The U.S. voted against it. CBS's Deborah Patta on the crisis in Gaza.
There are 229 men, women, and children still being held hostage inside Gaza. Hamas has claimed 50 have already been killed in Israeli war strikes, a claim we cannot independently verify.
The Pentagon says U.S. fighter jets launched attacks in Syria in retaliation for multiple attacks against U.S. bases and personnel in the region. CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland.
These groups probably move around, come up to a base, pull up a truck, launch these rockets pretty quickly and move away. So it's unclear to me that this will actually eliminate that particular capability. And certainly Iran has the capacity to move more missiles and rockets into those areas should it desire to do so.
Still no sign of Maine mass shooting suspect Robert Card. The 18 people who were killed in a Lewiston bowling alley and a restaurant have been identified and ranged in age from 14 to 76. Some were taking part in a tournament with other members of the deaf community. Maine's Public Safety Commissioner Mike Salchek says of the police response.
That initial 911 call was occurred at 6:56 p.m. The first officer, the first Lewiston officer arrived based on that system at 7 p.m., so 4 minutes later.
Richard Mole, a character actor who found lasting fame as an eccentric but gentle giant bailiff on the original Night Court sitcom, has died. He was 80. A family spokesperson says Mole died yesterday at his home in Big Bear Lake, California. Mole played Bull Shannon on NBC's Night Court from 1984 to 1992, alongside stars Harry Anderson and John LaRoquette. After Night Court ended, Mole voiced various video games and comic book projects. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Pay raises for district attorneys and public defenders appear to be having the desired effect. Vacancies are down since the raises went into effect July 1st. Wisconsin District Attorneys Association President Eric Tony tells Wisconsin Public Radio that morale is also better. Public defenders say much the same about retention and morale. Now, Tony says he wants lawmakers to create more prosecutor jobs to help lighten the workload. Tomorrow is Prescription Drug Takeback Day in Wisconsin. People who have old prescription drugs sitting around the medicine cabinet can bring them to one of 140 events happening around the state. There are also nearly 500 drop boxes where people can leave their old medicine anytime. Attorney General Josh Call says Wisconsin is consistently one of the national leaders in the safety effort, and it makes a difference. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks win their season opener. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks won a thriller at Fiserv Forum, the final 118-117 over the Philadelphia 76ers. The Bucks jumped out to an early lead, but Philly came back in the fourth quarter. Giannis had 23 points and 13 rebounds.
We were up, then they came back, then we were up, they came back. You know, I felt we could take care of the ball better, take the game away from them when we were up 18 or we were up 12 or something, I don't remember. But we're going to come back, we're going to be better.
Damian Lillard scored 39 points points, setting a new team record for a debut.
It wasn't them telling me, you got to score, you got to do this. It was just, you know, they trust my judgment. They inbounded it to Giannis. I was just kind of reading him like, you know, what you want to do. And he was like, come get the ball.
Adrian Griffin gets the win in his first game as the head coach and gave the credit to Lillard.
You just got a sense during the game he wasn't going to let us lose. What can I say? You know, he was incredible.
That's Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. 33 tonight, under partly cloudy skies, northwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Highs level off around 45 tomorrow. Slight chance for scattered showers tomorrow night, 36. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 46 degrees.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
It's obliterating the previous record by 16 degrees. Heat and extreme dryness are driving an unusually high number of wildfires for mid-October in the Pacific Northwest all the way up into Canada, according to the Federal National Interagency Fire Center. Air quality in the Puget Sound has again reached unhealthy levels due to the fires.
It broke the previous record by 16 degrees?
Yep.
Everything's fine. Why worry?
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Yes, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. What a fabulous little place. Today we're going to be talking about striking workers, Ingredion workers, greedy corporate America. These workers have been on strike for over 70 days. I think like 76 days now, 77 days. And it comes back to the same things that we keep talking about. Wages, hours, conditions, family life balance. You know, we came out of Chicago, and this is one of those things that is in this moment is so important to remember. Reality, over 100 years ago, people fought for the 8-hour day. People fought, bled, and died for 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. And what we're hearing in place after place after place coming out of the pandemic, and look, this was before the pandemic as well. This whole forced overtime, working extra days, you know, working without days off, all of this stuff, not new. What is kind of new are people going, you know what, had enough of it. We came out of the pandemic, you called us heroes. We came out of the pandemic, called us essential, told us how wonderful we were, how important we were. And now you're saying, no, we're just going to use and abuse you. And the other part, and this is the other part, this is the part that gets me. And we're not going to pay you. We're not going to share the wealth that your labor is creating. And look, this Ingredion company, big multinational foreign-owned corporation who is making enormous sums of profit. But again, it's never going to be enough for corporate America. There's never enough profit. Remember, rule number one, never enough profit. And these workers have said, you know what? Enough already. You're not going to screw us out of our health care. You're not going to screw us out of our days off. We're gonna fight back. And look, you know, as we talked to some of these workers and we spent time on the picket line. Look, we got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. For those who know me, if I'm not already up because I work nights, if I'm not getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, Herculean leap, waking me up not an easy thing. But 5 o'clock in the morning, it's cold, it's a little frigid. Hitting the donut shop, getting a couple of boxes of donuts, some coffee to take over to the picket line. Because rule number one of going to a picket line is you never go empty-handed. And we showed up, you know, got there before the 6 o'clock shift change, and you know, people were already there waiting, doing their picket duty. And it's cold. I mean, you know, the reality is, this isn't, nobody wants to do this. Nobody wants to be on strike. And as someone who, you know, in my life has been on strike, nobody goes, gee, I hope this year we go on strike. I hope this year we have strife in our life. I hope we have chaos. Nobody does this. But with every person that I talk to the person, we didn't have a choice. They forced us into this. And some went even to say, look, you know, they did this on purpose. The company made offers that they knew no one could take because they wanted the strike. They wanted this to happen. Now, understand, Iowa is a no rights at work state, has been a no rights at work state for a very long time. This is not new. What is interesting about this state is you have a very strong union connection. The work folks here, you know, while it may not have the union density of other areas, the people who are union members, this is strong stuff. And here in Ingredion, as I understand it, none of their workers crossed the picket line. This, I shouldn't be shocked. I shouldn't be surprised. But in a no rights at work state, in a state that has just been hammering on workers, this speaks volumes to me that you get everybody to say, you know what, we're going to cross that threshold and we're going to go get out on that picket line. Because understand, when you cross out onto that threshold and you go out on that picket line, you don't know that you're ever going to come back. That is a courageous act. And, you know, I spent a little time talking with a friend the other day about, you know, how in this country we just complain a lot. When something's wrong, we spend a lot of time complaining. We spend a lot of time angry, a lot of anger, but not a lot of real serious consequence actions. Going on strike is one of those actions. Going on strike is putting your neck on the line, is putting your family on the line, putting your economic future on the line, because you believe that what you're fighting for is the right thing to do. And this is why I'm such a big supporter of people who are on strike and who do this, because they're not just fighting for themselves, although that's a big part of it. They're fighting for their coworkers. They're fighting for their children's future. They're fighting for their communities. They're fighting for a share of the economic pie that their labor creates. This is much bigger than just, I want more for me, which is how it's always painted. It's always painted, these greedy workers, they want more. No, they want workers to have more of the labor, that more of the wealth that their labor creates. It's about sharing. It's about fairness. And it's about the community as well. Because understand, if their lives get better, if they get better wages, hours, conditions, the community benefits as well. And this is where I ask the question all the time. Anybody who's been on strike, how's the community? What kind of support are you getting from the people who aren't union members, who aren't on strike, who don't know what's going on? What kind of support are you getting? And here, overwhelmingly, as we walked on the picket line, people beeping, waving, all of that stuff, incredible community support. Now, you did have the police. I drove by the day before to kind of scope out where things were, you know, kind of get a sense of the environment, what I needed to prepare for. Because when you do this and you're driving a 31-foot RV, you got to find a place to park. You know, there's all kinds of logistics. And the first thing I noticed, there was a cop on the beat. And he wasn't there, in my view, to protect the workers as much as to be the intimidating force that we see across the country. Now, again, you talk to the people on the line and say, hey, you know, for the most part, police have been somewhat fair. In a no rights at work state, you would expect maybe something different. But here it seems that's not yet happening. Now you look down at Alabama, where Amazon paid the police to harass and intimidate organizers. This is another one of those things that I keep an eye on. But you know, here's the thing that gets me. Companies do this kind of stuff to push people into a strike so that they can get rid of them. This is, to me, this is union busting at its core. This is them saying, you know what, There's only a couple of plants in our system that are unionized, where people get good wages, benefits, all of that. We want to break that up. We want more. We want to line our pockets, not yours. And some of the stories that came out, some of the horrible stories. And again, this is what you get. The company, you're spreading propaganda, bringing scabs across the line, using temp agencies of desperate workers who are going, look, you know, I need a job and I'm going to scab on your job. And this is one of those things. I don't care how hungry I am. I'm never doing it. Never. Because here's what I know. I know the second that strike is over, they're going to kick me to the curb. And if they don't kick me to the curb, what kind of work environment am I going to have once this is over? Because I'm always going to be that scab. This is one of those moments where, you know, as I've explained before, it's kind of like, perfect example. I was leading a strike a number of years ago, and a policeman came up, knew nothing about what was going on, but was called to the scene because a scab was complaining that, well, you know, the people were calling him mean names. And he's a scab, so mean names are something that comes with it. And as I explained to the police officer, I said, are you married? And he said, yeah. I said, you know, have you and your wife ever had a problem? And he's like, oh, yeah. I said, your wife ever gone off to her mother's? You know, I'm going away. And you go, yeah. I go, now imagine your wife goes to your mother's. And you decide, I'm going to get all gussied up, put my Sunday best on. I'm going to go get some flowers. I'm going to put some cologne on. And you walk over to the mother-in-law's house, open up the gate, and there I am, engaged in activities with your wife. How are you going to feel about that? You going to be angry? You going to be upset? Of course you are. And that's what this is here. The company and the workers, they have a relationship. They're having a little struggle right now. They're going to work it out. It's going to happen. And the more people who get involved in that relationship, the more difficult it becomes, which is why people need to stay out of these things, policemen, government, and not in scabs, and let the company and the workers work things out, knowing that eventually it's going to happen. But the more people who meddle in it, the more people that get themselves involved in it, the angrier it's going to be and the harder it's going to get. I've always been a supporter of letting companies and unions work this stuff out. Problem is, companies buy governments. Companies buy police departments. Companies want to put their thumb on the scale so that it benefits them. Because if they can break a strike, you know what happens? They make more money. They make tons of money. And you look at this, and what's kind of interesting to me is this is a company, again, wildly profitable, this Ingredion company. And I love the fact that in their name is the greed. I mean, it's built into the name of the company, Ingredion. That speaks volumes to me. But if you're a shareholder of this company, seriously, if you're a shareholder of this company, you've got to be asking questions. Because the reports that we're hearing, products terrible, customers angry. If products getting out the door, It ain't the stuff that people are expecting. And the people getting the products are saying, well, we're going to hold off. You're shutting down other production. This is kind of corporate malfeasance. This is kind of corporate malpractice. If you're a shareholder, and look, if you have any shares of Ingredion right now, I'd be contacting the CEO, because virtually nothing's coming out of the plant. They're paying enormous amounts of bonuses to the scabs and to the management who are working there. In fact, they're paying so much, and this is the part that drives me nuts. They pay so much that had they just taken maybe, half of what they're spending on breaking the union to give to the work folks, you would never, never have a problem. But this is about power. This is about control. This is about the master-servant relationship. This is about corporate America letting the workforce know that they're in charge. And in these moments, we're going to see some of this happening, especially as we're coming out of the pandemic, and especially as workers are asserting their power and demanding that they be treated with dignity and respect. This is one of those moments. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with one of the striking Ingredion workers. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
The
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2013. That was the day that two workers on California's Bay Area Rapid Transit, or BART as it is more commonly called, were struck and killed by a train. Christopher Shepard was a BART track engineer. Lawrence Daniels was a contract employee. Both men had years of experience working on the tracks. They were inspecting the tracks when they were hit and killed. Workers who usually operated the trains were out on strike. The Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 1555, and SEIU Local 1021 had walked off the job the day before. The strike disrupted the daily commute of 400,000 Bay Area travelers. The unions were on strike for improved wages and safer working conditions. The union wanted bulletproof glass for station agent booths for worker safety. They also asked for improved lighting in the tunnels. According to an article in Mother Jones, quote, a BART spokesman called the safety issues a smokescreen, arguing that contract negotiations were not the place to raise them. In response to the strike, BART was training a replacement worker to run the train when the tragedy occurred. The manager, who was supposed to monitor the inexperienced driver, had left the car. In addition, the National Transportation Safety Board found that BART had no way for workers on the tracks to communicate with the drivers. The family of Lawrence Daniels sued BART, which settled for $300,000. The union and BART settled the strike 2 days after the tragic deaths. The union won nearly a 16% pay raise. The union also won safety upgrades. But management won concessions on employee contributions to medical benefits and pensions. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So we've been sharing some stories of the guys here who have been on strike for over 70 days against this company, Ingredion. And again, the sense, you know, if you're not getting it, and I guess I got to tell you, these guys didn't want this. They wanted a contract to go through. They wanted to continue to come to work. They wanted to continue to support their families. Like every person that I've ever talked to, nobody wants to go on strike. But it is the last arrow in the quiver, and sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on here at Ingredion, I've asked Zach Norman to come sit down with us. He's a dryer operator here at Ingredion, been working here 8.5 years. Zach, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, no problem.
So, what thoughts? What's going on here?
What's going on? You're on strike. Better pay. They're trying to take away our vacation days. We ain't having it. They tried this about 7 years ago, and we ended up working with no contract, and we weren't going through that again, so now we're here.
This seems to be a constant theme. I mean, you know, not just here, but in a lot of workplaces across the country, people are like, hey, we value our time off, we value family time, we work so that we can live, we don't live to work. And yet these employers, like here in Ingredion, seem to want you to be here every day. In fact, one of the people said that one of their proposals was you could work, 12 hours, 14 days straight without a day off. But hey, that's okay. It's only 14 days.
Yeah, that they're not wrong. That's one of the proposals. And they're like, no, 14 days, that's 2 weeks. One day off and do it all over again? Nah, I don't think so. That ain't gonna fly. We got families too.
Yeah.
You know.
So. Now the weird thing is you guys were, you know, during the pandemic, you were the essential workers, you were the frontline heroes. You kept this company going and came to work every day and did all of that through the pandemic. Do you feel like essential now? Do you feel like that frontline hero that they patted you on the back with? Is that you feeling all warm and fuzzy like with that those titles?
No, not right now. We're on the street. I mean, they say all that to basically cover themselves, I guess. Hey, make you feel good, you know, make them money, and now come contract time, like, oh, that's in the past, and give us a not so good offer and contract, and here we are, 70 plus days out in the street.
No, I've talked to some people who said, you know, look, there's some folks going to get other jobs, you know, and, you know, maybe some people aren't going to come back. And as I said a moment ago, you know, the reality is they have a hard enough time finding people to come work here as it is. This can't be helpful. And it's kind of interesting that they wanted that language in there where you don't get days off because they can't seem to find people to help you guys out. So you, the loyal employee, been here 8.5 years, we're going to just abuse you while you're here. Seems to be where they're going.
Yep. Yep. I myself found another job. So I don't know if I'm going to come back or not, but I would like to, you know, but yeah.
And why, you know, what is it here that you like about being here?
It's in town where the town I live. So, I mean, it's not too far from where I live, and I like working with the people here, you know, just we have a long crowd or the union. It's nice to work with those guys.
So it's the community.
It's the community, essentially, yes.
And that's the thing I keep hearing from people. You know, they're looking out for each other. This really is like a family.
It is. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Before, when I started working there, you would have to know somebody to know somebody to even get a shot in Penford. And I like to call it Penford because it all will be Penford for me. But it's Greedion now. And now it's like they can get any Joe Schmo off the street. And they have trouble finding people doing that. And the ones that have been there forever, they just... I mean, overtime up the wazoo and everything else, it's like it gets really tiring.
Yeah, it's interesting. Greed's right in the name.
Yeah, Ingredion, yes, sir. So,
and look, you know, everybody I've talked to has pointed that out, that this company is wildly profitable. It's a massive company, headquartered out of Chicago. They make huge profit. CEO's lying in his pockets, but wants you guys to
suffer, essentially. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a sad reality, but we got to stand up for what we want, and we'll get there. It just takes some time. We've gone 70 plus odd days. We'll go 70 more until whatever it takes. We'll be out here
one day longer,
and one day stronger.
There you go. So, you know, in being here 8.5 years, now the reality is it's your labor, you and all the guys walking on this picket line. It's your labor that creates the profits this company enjoys, the money that the shareholders put into their pockets. Any message for them?
Just come to the table and talk. That's all. That's all we're asking for. Just a fair contract.
You know, maybe thank you.
Yeah, just a thank you.
Maybe
yeah.
Thank you that all the work we
get
do.
Get to know your employees. I mean, we're all different walks of life. You know, everybody in there either has a degree, military service. So just get to know your employees, the ones who actually work for you and make you the money. I mean, we're just average people, yeah. You know.
Now, this morning we were here and they brought scabs across the picket line with a police escort because evidently you guys are terrorists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just sad. Taxpayer money, you know. Yeah, have a 24/7 cop presence here because we're apparently our animals and they're scared for their lives. And man, it's not far from the truth. Far from the truth.
There have been some interesting rumors spread by the company that I find interesting, that you're crawling under people's cars and taking the oil plugs out. And,
yeah.
You know, you're going after people's wives. Any reality in that stuff?
No, it's just laughable. They just try to make stuff up to get the community against us or whatever floats their boat, you know, justifying police presence. Or.
And how has the community responded to the strike?
Very good. The community supports us. Everybody drives by, honks their horns in support. It's just nice. It's just nice to know that our community supports us.
Because this is one of those which side are you on scenarios, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're on the side of the people who do the work, or you're on the people on the side of the people who take the profits.
Right. Yep.
There doesn't seem to be any gray area for me in that, and I don't think there should be.
No. You're either one side or the other. So.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Zach Norman. He's a dryer operator here at Ingredion. Been here about 8.5 years. They've been on strike over 70 days. And as he said, look, it's going to be one day longer, one day stronger as we see this. Now, you didn't want this. No, I've never met somebody who goes, yeah, I'm looking forward to going on strike. I'm looking forward to all of my savings being used up. Or am I wrong?
No. Strike benefits nobody. Absolutely. Ones are out of the job, and the management in there are not used to working all these long hours and stuff. And, strike benefits nobody. Absolutely nobody. It's the last resort. It's sad that we got to come to it, but it happens. It's the reality. And like I said, we'll be out here as long as it takes for a fair contract.
And then, because, again, I go back to some of the stories we've talked about already that, you know, you have the customers. Mm-hmm. who are going to suffer in this as well. It's not even just the workers who are going to get screwed over because they're not making wages. They've got their health care cut, all of the, you know, the instability and insecurity that comes from being in this situation. But the customers, they're not secure or stable because, well, they're not getting the product they need, and they're not getting the quality product that they need.
In a timely fashion, yeah, right. Yeah, like everybody, it benefits nobody. Customers, everybody. So, yeah, all the talent are out on the streets. That's what they need to sufficiently.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. An escalation in the Israel-Hamas war as Israel steps up ground activity. CBS's David Martin at the Pentagon.
What we may be seeing here is a rolling start to the ground invasion of Gaza.
Israel's defense minister says his country expects the ground offensive will be long and difficult given the vast network of tunnels used by Hamas. CBS's David Martin reports.
You're operating underground in the dark in narrow spaces. And it is just a nightmare for combat.
CBS's Rami Innocencio in Tel Aviv, where he heard and saw assaults from the air in the direction of Gaza.
Hamas says that all communications, all phone lines, all internet is out in the Gaza Strip. The Ministry of Health has said that at least 30 people have been killed.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A Dane County judge has blocked a move by state lawmakers to remove the state's top election official. Attorney General Josh Call filed the lawsuit after the state Senate voted to remove Megan Wolf from the position. In a court filing, Republican leaders said that the vote was symbolic. While today's motion isn't the final ruling on the matter, the judge ruled that Wolf is allowed to continue serving as the state's election administrator until they make a final decision. Penalties could be on their way up for assaulting or doxing an election official in Wisconsin. A new bipartisan bill would also keep people from looking up clerks' phone numbers or addresses through public records requests. Local clerks from across the country say they're facing more and more harassment since the 2020 presidential election. If the bill becomes law, assaulting an elections clerk could mean 18 months in jail. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. 33 tonight, under partly cloudy skies, northwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Eyes level off around 45 tomorrow. Slight chance for scattered showers tomorrow night, 36. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab. You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and the Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
1858 Constitutional Convention. Mary worked with Osborne Perry Anderson to publish his 1861 memoir, A Voice from Harper's Ferry. Anderson had participated in Brown's raid and was the lone African-American survivor. After her husband's death, Mary returned to the United States with her children to help recruit black soldiers for the Union Army. Once the Civil War was over, Mary moved to Washington, D.C. to teach. She enrolled in Howard University, where she earned a law degree. There, she joined the National Women's Suffrage Association and worked with Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. She continued to advocate for civil rights and women's equality until her death in 1893.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Or check out our website, find out where we've been, where we're going here on the Working Class Radio Tour. You know, as we head towards Iowa, you know, it's a state I've only been to once, and I've heard a lot of things over the years. You know, the heartland, you know, the heart of our manufacturing base, the heart of, well, part of the breadbasket, all that stuff. You know, growing up in the Midwest, you think of, you know, good, hard scrabble, hardworking folks, family-built communities, and sadly, over the last several years, well, that's the same message. Also here to share some thoughts on, well, what we can expect as we travel in to the great state of Iowa. I've asked Charlie Wishenman to come talk with us. Charlie is the president of the Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO. Charlie, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Rick. Really appreciate it.
So, you know, one of the things, when you think of Iowa, you think of, you know, that kind of heartland, that kind of Midwestern, you know, that middle class, real hard scrabble kind of mentality. So what are we going to expect as we come to your state?
You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of places that have been economically left behind in just like all across the upper Midwest and across the entire country, for that matter. It just looks more rural, but that doesn't mean that we don't have food deserts, or we don't have things that are, you know, the same problems that go on in urban areas are the same problems that are going on in rural America. And the root of all of it is really corporate greed when you get down to it.
You know, when you think of Iowa, you think of, you know, farming, you think of, you know, that kind of rural, but you don't really think, you know, manufacturing. But Iowa's always been a manufacturing hub in this country. I mean, when you think of that small town with, you know, the factory as a huge part of the local economy, and, you know, the 80s and 90s, we saw a lot of devastation and a lot of destruction and a lot of pain and misery in your state.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I distinctly remember when I was a kid, and actually, so I grew up on a farm, and I was real young, but I do remember at the same time, you know, those of us in the state and in across the Midwest were going through the 1980s farm crisis. At the same time, the packing house workers at Hormel were on strike in town, right? And I just remember my mom explained to me, you know, just in really basic terms to a kid, but the same folks who are keeping us down as small farmers are the same people who are keeping the workers in town down that were on strike. And I think that what you've seen is not just, if you take the packing houses, right, that, you know, even our own Senator Grassley, who's not exactly known for being progressive in any way, is like behind breaking up the meatpacking monopolies. And meanwhile, if you see what's happened to agriculture in the state as well, agriculture has been monopolized as well. So you don't have small farmers anymore. And the same thing when it comes to corporations.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, I got a lot of the same messaging from my grandparents that your mother gave you, that there's not a disconnect between the rural and the urban, between farmers and factory workers, between, you know, truck drivers and retail workers, that there's not a divide in the working class. When did that really become to happen? Because, you know, I seem to think that, you know, the commonality in all this, and part of what we're trying to talk about on this tour is that we in the working class, we're all one. We should all be united. And the only way we pull this country back from the abyss is if working people stand shoulder to shoulder. But sadly, I don't hear the message that your mother was telling you very often.
No, I don't think you do. And even further, you know, I mean, you're a tad bit older than me, I think, but probably not by much. My entire life has been trickle down economics and like this entire lie that's been sold to the working class of this country, that if you just make rich people richer, that somehow they're going to help the rest of us out. And I think that what is happening right now, whether people realize it or not, people are waking up to that trickle down economics isn't working. And I especially hear this on picket lines, and we have three times as many strikes as we did just even a year or two ago, right? But people get that the wealth is not trickling down to them from the corporation on the employer side. Now they need to figure out the tax code side of it as well. But they know that corporations are not giving them their fair share.
Right. And this is why this trip to me is so important, and why getting out and talking to people on picket lines and talking to people in bars and doing what we're doing on this tour, I think is important to change the narrative. Because just what you said, you know, I'm only a couple years older than you. I'm 55. You know, I grew up with the same kind of, if we make rich people richer, it'll trickle down on us. They're smart. They know what to do. Give them all the power and wealth, and eventually their pockets will fill, and then we can scurry over the crumbs. And the pockets never fill. Crumbs are never left behind. And you're right. I think working people are angry, but sadly, you know, through the corporate dominance of our media, they've given us other things to be angry about. So for me, it's about bringing the message back to economics. It's back to the kitchen table. It's back to putting food on the table for our kids, a roof over their heads, opportunity, and all of that. But, you know, I'm looking in this moment and I'm going, this is the fight that Democrats had better figure out how to get on board with instead of all this other stuff. This is the stuff that working people had better push the other part, the Republican Party, to get on board with. Or I think we're in real trouble.
Oh, you're entirely correct here. The populism, I guess the economic populism that was sold to folks in 2016, you know, it never really materialized. What we got, you know, basically more tax cuts for the rich. We got more of the same typical, you know, right-wing philosophy when it comes to economics. They're, you know, I will say, yes, it's good that we renegotiated the United States-Mexico trade agreement, but it sure could have been a heck of a lot better. It needed to be done, but that is an issue that we need to, that if you're talking, you want to talk about politics, Democrats need to wake up to. Because my entire life, they've complained about trade and said they're going to do something about it. And at the same time then candidate Trump was out, you know, hey, saying we need to do something about NAFTA. At the same time, the president of the United States, President Obama, was negotiating the TPP, which would have been disastrous. So I think that now we have an administration, from all accounts and everything that I have researched and known and talked to, that actually takes trade seriously. Not just the negotiation of it, but the actual enforcement of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, we've got to start running away from neoliberalism, running away from supply side voodoo Reaganomics, and back to what made this country great. And you know, when I talk to my MAGA hat wearing friends, they all point to the Norman Rockwell era of the 50s and 60s, and they have this idealized version, but their narrative is a touch off. And what I think, one of the things that I want to try and correct is, the reality is, you know, my grandparents were very clear about what made the 50s and 60s great for them. You know, high taxation on the very wealthy, the top marginal tax rate on someone making in today's dollars $1.6 million a year was 92%. Corporate America was paying 56% tax rates. strong investment from governments and infrastructure and education and healthcare. And yes, high unionization and strong unionization rates, as high as 35% in the private sector. That's what built the most prosperous working class in history. And that's what we need to, that's the recipe forward, in my view. And I think Biden and this administration is moving us in that direction.
Absolutely. You know, we just have, you know, I wish that we had I think we've got a House of Representatives that has passed something called the PRO Act several times, but just like so many things, we have a problem with getting things through the United States Senate that are priorities for the American people. And just, what's the disconnect between when you have, union density in this country is 11-12%, maybe something, on average, but our approval rating is something like 71%. That's how many people that would join a union or consider joining a union in their workplace, and what our approval rating is. That shows me that there's a huge disconnect between the laws in this country around organizing and around being able to have a voice in your workplace, and what is actually what the people want. And until we correct that, we're not going to be able to get back to that recipe you're talking about, that unions built the middle class in this country and the middle class built this country.
Yeah, I mean, it's the imbalance of power. The wealthy have all the money and the power. And, I always say we've out procreated them. We should use that while we still can. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Charlie Wishman. He's the president of the Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO. We'll get links out on how you can check out the work that they do there at the Iowa Federation of Labor. You know, Charlie, in looking at this moment, you talked about it a second ago, union approval at a high, the highest it's been in my lifetime. We're seeing all this organizing going on, all this energy going on. But you know the messaging, as we're seeing the Fed kind of slamming on the brakes of the economy, is going to be, you're the responsibility. You're the reason that the recession's going to happen because you're greedy. It's the same thing that they told factory workers as these companies were shutting down factories and moving overseas. It's because you were asking for too much. Do you get upset when you hear that frame? Does it bug you?
Oh my gosh, the Fed is, I have completely disagreed with raising interest rates on that. I mean, when the Fed is raising interest rates on people, what they're saying is, sorry, you're making too much money. That has not ever been the problem, especially with what's going on right now. But the problem in this country has not been that the working class of this country has made too much money. That is not it. For whatever you want to say about, some of the early robber barons and even the Henry Fords or whatever, but they at least understood that you had to pay people decent enough that they could buy their stuff. And I don't know that the robber barons of our era, the Musks and the Bezoses and the, fill in the blank out there, that they really realize that, we can't just have a permanent surf class. That's not a sustainable, not just economy, or it's clearly not a sustainable democracy.
Yeah, I mean, it's most certainly something that we have to address. Do you have hope in this moment? I mean, there's a lot to be hopeful for with all the organizing going on, but there's also, as divided as we are, as much power as the wealthy have, and you look at our Supreme Court, I view us moving, labor law-wise backwards as opposed to forward. Where do you find yourself?
Well, first of all, I'd say I always have hope that workers are going to be coming together to correct wrongs that are happening in their workplaces. You could outlaw unions tomorrow and our grandkids would reinvent them, because they are necessary in an economy and they are necessary in a democracy. But I think there's all kinds of signs of hope. And I'm not just talking about the younger generation, but the younger generation wants to know and learn and organize, and they have a personal stake in this more than they have ever seen before. But we have a labor movement that, while things aren't great politically for the labor movement, the what's going on in the streets when we're fighting back, that is the place where change is happening in this country. It's happening with workers fighting back right now.
Yeah, I have hope that, you know, the reality is that I've talked to a lot of younger workers, and you know what they say is they watch their parents just be ground down to nothing. They watch their parents have their pensions stolen and their jobs, you know, just beaten with longer hours and lower pay and, you know, less health care, and, you know, go down the list of all the bad things that have happened over these last 40 years. And they're saying, we're not going to do that. And there's that point, isn't there, where people just say, you know what, we're not taking it anymore. And coming out of the pandemic where we were told we were heroes, we were essential, I think people have had enough.
Oh, completely. You know, like, part of me wants to have that reaction, you know, hey, I worked second shift, I worked third shift before in my life. What are you guys complaining about? And it's like, wait, and maybe I was the stupid one here.
Exactly. I say this all the time because I've had people go, well, you know, we had to go through this. I go, yeah, well, who was the dumb one? Right. You know, who you did it. Yeah, because who was the dumb one? You have these people realize they have actual power. And this is what I think is an exciting moment when working people realize that they have power and they can change things. This is that epiphany moment.
It absolutely is. And it's not just it's people all across the labor movement, but labor leaders right now need to be recognizing the moment that they are in and what they can do to help their membership take control of their lives. And finally, and you want to talk about the rail workers that were about to go on strike. Yes, that was about pay, that was about benefits. But what it was really about is that these guys don't have lives.
Yep.
Because of the scheduling. It is crazy that, and even in the agreement that came to them, they basically get one sick day. Let's see if this, you know, who knows if that's getting voted up or down, but you know what? I don't blame them. Now is the time. Otherwise, you know, they feel like I was just door knocking yesterday for a plumber friend of mine in Council Bluffs who's running for county supervisor. And that I was talking to some rail workers, and that's it. They are just sick and tired of it. But it's not just them. It's when John Deere went on strike. It's when anybody out there. I talked to them. They know exactly how much their CEO makes. They know exactly how much their corporation made since the beginning of the pandemic. And they've woke up. I mean, the pandemic was a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But the one good thing to come out of it is workers realized exactly. I mean, it just laid bare all the problems out there.
People had a lot of time to do their research, so to speak. But, you know, here's the thing, and this is where I'm hoping the message is, because you brought up the rail workers. I'm going to take the position, you can agree or disagree, but without Joe Biden in the White House, that never gets to where it got to. The Congress, you get the Senate who comes in, they pass a resolution, and they ram that contract down those guys' throats, and they force them back to work, and there's no strike, there's none of that stuff that goes on without Biden in the White House.
It's not just Biden in the White House, because this is what's so important and I try to talk to our members about. It's not just who's in charge, but it's who's in charge, who they put in charge.
Exactly.
Because if Marty Walsh, our Secretary of Labor, which plenty of your listeners may not have ever heard of.
We've had him on the show a number of times over the last several
months. Okay, well, there you go. I mean, Marty Walsh, right? He comes out of the building trades in Boston. He was the mayor of Boston. He knows how to negotiate and get something done. So that doesn't even happen if you don't have a Joe Biden and a Marty Walsh there. So I completely agree with you.
No, and this is why, again, I come back to this moment. This is why politics matters. And this is why I got to ask you. The reality is a lot of union members voted for the last guy. Because he sold them on the idea they were going to make Iowa manufacturing great again. And, you know, because Iowa, like Pennsylvania, like where I grew up in Ohio, lost a lot of manufacturing prowess. I mean, we used to be the country that was the manufacturing country of the world. Now, not so much. Do you see this administration moving us in a positive direction, whereas the last guy, maybe not so much?
Sure. You know, if there was something that the previous president was very good at was marketing himself. But if you actually look, I think, at the results, no, there was not a ton of manufacturing that came back to America. And not only that, there wasn't what you see in the what you see coming from the Biden administration. And look, I was a Biden skeptic for sure, but you know, it's about also what new and emerging technologies are out there that we can actually be manufacturing in this country. And I think it's somebody who completely saw what happened and is living through, you know, being a president when we have supply chain issues that are way beyond the fault of so much of it just has to do with the pandemic screwing up so many things, right? But realizing that we cannot ever get into the position where there's a, you know, deadly infectious disease going around, we can't even get, you know, N95s for nurses, you know, let alone all the other ventilators and everything else. If you think back to the beginning, what we needed that we didn't have, and that it was only made in China.
Yeah. No. Last question I got for you. You know, we got the crew going across a number of states, and I've been asking people while we're out and about, while we're in Des Moines, where do I have to feed the crew? What's the best place in Des Moines to eat?
Oh man. If you like Italian, there is a lot of really good Italian in this city, especially on the south side of town is a very Italian part of town. I don't want to name one.
There you go. I got place, it.
But there's a lot of good Italian on our south.
Good
side.
Stuff, Charlie. As always, I appreciate the time. I look forward to seeing you when we come to town. Thanks so much for your time.
All right, be in touch. Thanks, Rick.
Good stuff, Charlie Wishman, president of the Iowa Federation of Labor. Love to hear your thoughts. Follow us along on the tour. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Find out where we've been, where we're going, all of that stuff. Just go to thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I come back to this Ingredion strike, and this, again, keyword being greedy. Again, there's a corporation wildly profitable. And what they're paying in the plant, and this is, you know, one of the conversations we had with people who said, you know, they're giving out like $25,000 bonuses for these people to cross the picket line, these scabs to come across their picket line, and putting out a subpar product. I mean, this is the part that gets me. Now you talk to these workers and they're all saying this kind of the same thing. They've got health concerns. And then the shenanigans that went on with their health insurance. One of the things these companies do when this happens, one of the very first things they do is cut off your health insurance, because they know that, well, they know that people have, you know, spouses who have needs, they have, you know, workers who have needs. You know, especially when you're talking about an older workforce. Now, remember, this is one of those things where they tell us, you know, oh, we love our employer-sponsored healthcare. Yeah, until they yank it away, until they rip it away from you for not doing what you're told. You know, working in poverty, you know, working, you know. This is one of the things that got me. The guy was, he explained to me that their contract proposal went like this, that they had the right to mandate overtime. And mandate, you know, you be on call on your off days. So you don't actually get a day off. It's kind of like, you know, the people working on the railroads. They never really get a day off. So you could work, according to what I'm being told, that the contract language says, you could work 14 straight days, 12 hours or more each day for 14 days before anything happens. And you go, what's the point of then having a contract? And exactly, this is what they're trying to put out there. Look, you know, the union did this to you. No, you're doing this. And these workers are saying, no, we're not, and I keep using this phrase, we're not going to live to work.
We work to live. We work to pay our bills. We work to support our families. This isn't our existence. And look, you know, I keep coming back to this idea that it's not the factory jobs that people really want. It's the wages. It's the working conditions. It's the benefits, the wages and the benefits more than everything else. And those, they're not there anymore, which is why these workers are saying, look, you know, we came out of the pandemic. We remember when we were essential? Remember when we were frontline heroes? Remember that? Remember the good old days? Does your mind go that far back? And they're saying we want to be treated as such. And, you know, one of the guys was talking about his wife having some needs and having some issues, and the fact that they need health insurance and having to go through COBRA is ridiculous because COBRA is just enormously expensive and it's prohibitively expensive.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.